There's a really cheesy quote that I've heard at some point that strange suggestions of travel might be dance lessons from God. Super cheesy, but the truth is you kind of got to be open to things. Hey, my name is Greg Hill. I'm a Revelstoke local, if somebody local is after 20 years. Middle of April, I got a phone call from a film crew that was heading up to Mount Logan, and they invited me along to be their Sherpa, their camp helper, the guy that just does everything. And I'd worked with this Arcade Motion crew before, so they were keen on having me along.
Greg was there along with the visual and sound person, you know, to help carry their huge loads. They had normal loads for climbing Logan plus a crazy amount of, you know, their film equipment and stuff. So he's the very best person for such a job. My name is Allison Crisitello, and I'm the director of the Canadian Ice Core Lab at University of Alberta, and I'm a high-altitude mountaineer.
What we were doing is I was going to be part of a film crew that would film Allie Crisitello, who's this famous glaciologist who was heading up there with a crew of about a total of seven of them, to get up onto the top summit plateau of Mount Logan at around 5,200 meters. And while they're up there, they're going to drill an ice core on the highest place in Canada, on the largest non-polar ice cap in the world.
Mount Logan is the highest mountain in Canada at 5,959 meters. It looms in Kluane country in the Yukon, rugged country filled with big mountains, windy lakes, glaciers, grizzly bears, and mountain goats. Logan is the second highest peak in North America after nearby Mount Denali in Alaska. The two mountains are in the St. Elias Range.
I think for most of my life so far, I kind of ping-ponged between my two loves, you know, cryosphere science and cryosphere exploring. I mean, even in grad school, I think, you know, I'd work in Antarctica and then be in an ice core lab for a month and then write a bunch of papers and then take 4 months off and go to the Himalayas. And it was like everything was not integrated. I felt like I was always picking and choosing and just ping-ponging between stuff. And it wasn't really until I got this position here at U of A and have started my own lab and leading big projects that I can steer that I've been able to kind of integrate it all. And it feels really cool.
This was Allie's third time climbing Mount Logan, and the first time she planned to stay on the summit plateau to drill ice samples. The film crew Greg was there to support. They were making a film for National Geographic about Allie. National Geographic supported the trip as part of its Perpetual Planet initiative, which is supported by Rolex. That's according to an email from Allie's contact with National Geographic.
There were sort of basically two phases of this project. The first phase being climbing Logan, you know, from base camp up to the summit plateau in order for the whole team to be able to work safely at the altitudes that the core was being drilled at.
Kluane National Park is the largest mountains in Canada. When we were flying into the bottom of Mount Logan, it was a 45-minute flight through endless mountains. It's just this sea of incredible peaks and hanging glaciers, and it's mind-blowing how deep and how vast all the mountains are there.
And Logan, because of where it sits, it's got this enormous summit plateau. It's 20 kilometers long. It's above 17,000 feet. And it's, you know, the bedrock below the summit plateau is it's deep and it's sort of a bowl. So the ice is kind of stagnant and it has been allowed to accumulate over very long periods of time.
In the end, it took them 10 days to slowly make their way up the side of Mount Logan to the summit plateau. Some on the crew adjusted better than others.
The second night, we woke up in the morning, we're all ready to go, and all of a sudden the mechanic, the guy who's in charge of the drill, the essential guy that if anything goes wrong, he's the guy to repair the drill. He spent the night vomiting and diarrhea at like minus 15 or 20, and essentially right away there was discussion whether the whole trip was already canceled. anyhow, he eventually overcame that. He spent quite a lot of time going slower than the rest of us and overcame it. But that sickness actually went through three of the seven scientists, and kind of they all get wrecked and throwing up and not feeling good. So this took all the unknowns of a regular mountain climb and then added in us having to stay at 17,000 feet on this high elevation, high plateau, and just to live there for 2 weeks in itself is harsh on the body. I mean, I personally lost 15 pounds. Most of us lost about 10% of our body weight.
And then, of course, the second phase being having all of the drill and all of the scientific equipment flown up there and drilling the thing and getting the ice flown off. And I did have a big dome tent flown up over there, so we were able to drill basically no matter what the weather was. And I believe it was 11 days of drilling, with the drill being on about 14 hours a day, which is a lot. And it's a really long time to stay up there at that kind of altitude. I've never done such an experiment on myself, staying, you know, around 18,000 feet for almost 2 weeks.
At that point, another person in their crew ended up getting HAPE, high altitude pulmonary edema, which is basically his body wasn't adjusting and he wasn't absorbing enough oxygen, and he got quite close to death, really. He was coughing all night and for many nights, and we brought him some steroids to use, and then eventually I ended up long lining at like 17,000 feet. This helicopter came in with a 100-foot line off the bottom, and I ended up hooking him to it and flying him away.
In the end, Greg hooked up two more scientists to long lines attached to hovering helicopters because they were suffering from the altitude. He ended up joining the drill team.
I didn't have that much to do once we were up there filming, and I was like, well, I might as well join them and make it work as efficiently as possible. But the drill itself is kind of, I've been trying to figure out how to explain it. It's almost say like it's like almost a seesaw that what you're able to do is you're able to balance it horizontally and pull the ice core out, and then you seesaw it vertically, and then the drill is able to go down into this hole, and you slowly drill out a meter each time. Like the max you ever get is a meter, maybe a meter 20. I think at one point they got a meter 50 of ice core.
So there's the center stick of the ice core, which is the very most pristine part of the core. Not only have we not touched it, like it hasn't even seen the air in however many years old it is.
After they set up the tents, the teams used a radar to find the best place to drill the ice. When Greg mentioned sonar, what they were using was a radar.
And we were kind of looking for around 250 meters down to bedrock. And they ended up, the man in charge of the sonar, who I flew out a couple days later, he found a spot that was between 240 and 270 meters is what he said. So we started drilling there, and that was our goal. It's kind of like a marathon. We thought that was the end, you know, 250, 260. And, you know, we're doing about 30 meters a day. So anything past that is going to be an extra day or what have you. So as we're drilling, we kind of hit his points of 250. And then we had all sorts of bets going on. Then we hit 260, then we hit 270, and then it's the next day, and we hit 280, 290, 300. And, you know, all of a sudden we're 50 meters deeper than he thought, and getting frustrated because, you know, it's going to happen. We've already got a few people that are sick. By now I've flown off three people, you know, that are just, their bodies aren't doing well at that elevation. You know, here we are going deeper and deeper and getting quite frustrated because we assumed we were going to be hitting bedrock. And it got to the point where, we got 327 meters in, and we'd used all our bags to wrap all the ice cores up. We'd use all our box. We'd use everything because we were well beyond what we thought we were going to drill for.
The latitude of Logan means that the altitude is felt very heavily. So I think where our ice coring site was feels more like between 20 and 21,000 feet to the body. And that's not an altitude that you sort of acclimatize or recover at. So for those 11 days of really, really long drill hours, you know, I don't think anyone felt super good. None of us were sleeping that well, and it's kind of hard to eat and all these things. And it was just really incredible to watch basically this amazing people suffer all for a unified cause.
But yeah, the reward is that ice core, is that now that they've got that we pulled out. We pulled out 327 meters of ice, and it was all really nice ice cores that were going to be really easy for them to study for the next 10 or 15 years. The more I looked into it, the more I realized what a wild trip I was on. It wasn't just like a run-of-the-mill ice coring mission. It was like, it was as high, risky, and impressive a feat as anything I've ever seen, really.
A core from Mount Logan that's sitting right on the Gulf of Alaska in the middle of the North Pacific has the potential power of telling us something about long-term climate variability in the North Pacific that, say, an Antarctic or a high Arctic ice core couldn't, just because of its location on Earth. And in terms of, you know, tens of thousands of years of climate history, it's very, very unique outside of the polar regions. There aren't very many places that over these really long timescales don't see any melt, even in the height of summer. And also just in a more kind of geographical sense, like have all of those, the right conditions for these long-term records to be laid down in the snow and never melt, basically.
327 meters of ice samples from Mount Logan Summit Plateau were flown to waiting trucks and driven to the Canadian Ice Core Lab at the University of Alberta in Edmonton, which has ice core samples from all over the world.
The archive here, the minus 40 kind of ice library, has 1.5 kilometers of ice in it right now, not including what just came here from Logan. Most of it is from the Canadian High Arctic, but there are cores and samples from all over the world.
Meanwhile, Greg and Ali hopped on a bush plane flown by a young Kiwi named Andy, who's fulfilling his dreams of flying small planes in Yukon's big mountains. He flew them to the Kluane Lake Research Station.
I mean, it was such a nice feeling when we finally came out to just be smelling the trees and seeing nature, because 26 days of white, bleak mountain stuff is great, but coming back was way better.
It means this, I can't even put into words what this project means to me, but also just to be on this end of it now, having actually pulled it off and to have the ice, it's about 10 meters from where I'm sitting right now, safely back here. I think most longer-term climate records, you know, they give us a backward-looking perspective so that we can look forward. There's also specific aspects of the Logan Ice Core that I think will be very important, sort of counterintuitively. In some places on the planet, places at higher elevation are experiencing more rapid increases in temperature, which is really important in a lot of regions. You know, some of the other regions where this is happening are, there are billions of people who depend on water coming from these areas, not Logan, but some of these other areas experiencing the same phenomenon. And so where Logan sits is the largest non-polar ice field on Earth. It's just a mind-blowing amount of snow and ice locked up. And so there's a lot of concern about not just the elevation-dependent warming at higher altitudes, but warming in general across the St. Elias and the ice field ranges. And then, you know, more specifically, some of the certain things that we'll be looking at in the core are, for example, reconstructing wildfire history over time.
For me to be involved in this is really interesting. Like, one, because I hadn't been on any expeditions, and I'm trying to have more value to my expeditions. This was exactly what I was looking for. But also as an environmentalist, who often you always hear them talking about these climate records and ice cores, it kind of gave me this view into the other side of it, where they're getting these ice cores. And you know, as much as this trip is going to be for climate science, like, you know, we use so much fossil fuels to get to there. Like, there was so many eggs cracked to make the omelet or whatever, but it was still ideally all the information and everything we get from that overshadows any carbon usage and helps just kind of figure out the future and how to make the world a better place. But actually to be on that one side where like, oh, I'm part of it, getting this incredible ice core. And yeah, it was like Ali and I clicked and we had a blast up there. And you know, quite honestly, I'm looking forward to whatever next expedition she invites me on.
The third phase of this expedition starts on July 11th, when Allie and many of her colleagues will start to meticulously cut up the ice samples to study them.
That center pristine stick will go, essentially it gets directly melted and put into a mass spectrometer, an ICP-MS. And that gives us a huge suite of elements, things like heavy metals. Another stick will give us stable oxygen isotopes. Another stick will give us major ions, so, you know, sodium and chloride and things that come from the ocean that get transported and then precipitated in snow up on the top of Mount Logan and tell us about what's been happening off the coast in the past. We will take a stick, and I mentioned quickly that will go specifically toward this wildfire reconstruction. There's all sorts of sort of newer techniques for looking at not only, you know, wildfire frequency in the past, but what exactly was burning. So we can just kind of sort out different vegetation change. So there'll be a stick that goes to a colleague's lab for that. Yeah, both myself and Kira Holland, my PhD student who's working on this, as well as many, many colleagues. It takes a lot of people to do something like this.
Reporting for Stoke FM in Revelstoke, I'm Megan Dooling.